Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 111 for the week of May 10th, 2021. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. You can also download a PowerPoint presentation that includes images of those same charts you can use in your own presentations. Before we get into the usual weekly and monthly economic indicators, I wanted to revisit the ongoing surge in the creation of new trucking companies. As we discussed a few weeks ago, March had seen a record number of newly authorized for hire carriers. Well, April didn't just beat out March, it surpassed March by 20%, with more than 10,000 new trucking companies receiving operating authority from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. 2021 has already produced nearly 32,000 new carriers. That's more than we had seen in an entire year before 2014. And preliminary data indicates that May will be very strong as well. Based on applications for operating authority, we expect grants of authority to remain extraordinarily strong for at least a couple more months. Also, the Federal Appeals Court decision discussed in last week's podcast could stimulate even more applications as the days of using leased owner-operators in California could be numbered. The California Trucking Association is expected to file a request this week asking the court for an en banc rehearing of the three-judge panel's April 28th decision. If the court grants a rehearing, an injunction against California's enforcement of AB 5 presumably would remain in place pending a decision. On the other hand, if the court doesn't do so, that would clear California to begin enforcing the law soon, or at least in all probability it would. Anyway, there's one more point I want to make about the surge in new carriers, but I will hold off until we get to the jobs report. By the way, speaking of the issue of worker classification, the Department of Labor last week formally withdrew the Trump administration's final rule on that topic. I mention this almost as an afterthought because the action was 100% expected and because it never actually took effect, and therefore it really didn't change anything. Everybody basically assumed that the rule was dead once the election was decided. Okay, let's talk about the spot market. So load postings and rates in the truckstop.com system already were at record levels, as we discussed in the last podcast, when the market faced one of its biggest annual stress events, and that's the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's International Road Check. This three-day driver and vehicle inspection spree occurred during the week ended May 7th, which is week 18, and the result was sharp increases in volume and rates, and also a sharp drop in truck postings. Thus, week 18 saw records for loads, rates, and the market demand index, which is the ratio of loads to trucks. International Road Check historically has been one of the hottest weeks of the year for the spot market, as the event generally has encouraged truck drivers to take time off. The result usually is that shippers and brokers must seek more capacity in the spot market, which itself usually sees sharply reduced capacity. Until last year, Road Check had always occurred in early June. Last year, CVSA had rescheduled the event for early May, although it ultimately was postponed until September due to the pandemic. In case you doubt that International Road Check really matters, I encourage you to check out the presentation accompanying the podcast, which includes a chart that plots the average number of spot loads and the average number of roadside inspections for each week of the year. The correlation between the sharp increase in inspections during road check and the concurrent increase in spot loads is very clear, and there's no other plausible explanation, really, for the sharp increase in loads that week. So I have talked generally about how strong last week was. Let's talk numbers. Total volume rose nearly 12% during week 18. That's the strongest gain since the weather-related spike in week 8. Truck postings fell about 11%, and that's the biggest drop since week 7. As a result, the MDI jumped sharply to its strongest level ever, surpassing the prior record that was set in week 7. Dry van load postings jumped nearly 30% for the largest increase since week 7. Volume was still about 22% below the record level, which was posted the following week, week 8, during that surge. Refrigerated load postings soared nearly 32% for the largest increase since week 7. As with dry van, refrigerated volume fell short of its week 8 record, but only by 3.6%. Flatbed didn't look all that different from how it has looked for the past 3 weeks. Or 3 months, I should say, actually. Load postings increased 3.2% to set the 10th volume record in 11 weeks. Okay, let's talk rates, which were, as I noted earlier, a record. The broker-posted rate per mile, excluding fuel surcharges, rose nearly 9 cents for the largest gain since late last year. Spot rates were about 82% higher than the same 2020 week. Of course, that was during just the early stages of the recovery from the collapse due to the contraction. Dry van's increase of nearly 16 cents was the largest since week 8. Dry van rates were about 89% above the same week last year. Refrigerated rates rose to a record level with a surge of 30 cents, the largest gain since late last year. Refrigerated rates were about 65% higher than the same week last year. And flatbed rates set another record as well, but the increase of 6.5 cents was not extraordinarily strong compared to recent history. Flatbed rates were about 92% higher than the same week last year. Okay, let's talk about the situation with fuel. We don't usually have national headline news to talk about related to fuel, but I'm sure you've heard by now about the ransomware cyber attack against the Colonial Pipeline. As of this recording, management was expecting to be back online by the end of the week. As far as diesel is concerned, this does not come at an opportune time. Stocks of ultra-low sulfur diesel in the latest data, which was before the pipeline problem, were at their lowest level since mid-April of last year. That's not really that low, but pipeline struggles are certainly not a positive development. Meanwhile, the national average price of diesel rose 4.4 cents during the week ended May 10th, after a 1.8 cent increase the week before. The sharp gain in the latest week would not have been affected significantly by the pipeline issue. Odds are we'll see a healthy increase in prices during the coming week. Okay, let's wrap up our weekly data by looking at unemployment. We continue to see slow but steady improvement. Initial claims for benefits fell by 92,000 to 498,000 seasonally adjusted, and that's the lowest level since the beginning of the pandemic. Continued claims were up 37,000 to 3.7 million, but it's significant that the unadjusted figure barely changed. Continued claims in the two federally funded programs fell by a combined 334,000 to 11.8 million. The reduction was not especially large in comparison to the past down weeks that we've seen this year, but the data is significant because it represents the first time this year that federal programs have actually fallen in back-to-back weeks. And speaking of jobs, let's talk about the employment situation report for April, or what's usually called the jobs report. After 3 months of accelerating job gains, the U.S. economy in April added just 266,000 payroll jobs, seasonally adjusted, and that was far below expectations. A lot of people were expecting upwards of a million. The Bureau of Labor Statistics also revised February and March estimates, although the revisions put March job levels only about 78,000 below what BLS reported last month. Payroll employment remains 8.2 million jobs, or 5.4% below pre-pandemic levels. The unemployment rate ticked up to 6.1%, a tiny increase, but the first since April of last year. However, one factor in the higher rate was a welcome but small increase in the labor participation rate to 6.7% from, or 61.7% from 61.5% in March. The number of unemployed people rose for only the second time since April 2020, but increases in the ranks of unemployed are a typical consequence of higher labor participation. Even with the increase, the rate of labor participation remains 1.6 points below February of last year, and that represents nearly 4.2 million Americans who are still absent from the labor market. Leisure and hospitality was by far the largest job gainer during the month at 331,000 new jobs. But headcount remains about 2.8 million jobs, or 17% below February 2020 in that sector. Restaurants and bars represented about 56% of leisure and hospitality's increase in April. Other sectors seeing notable gains were government, which was led by local government education, and other services, which is a small but rather random collection of industries. Other major sectors of the economy either lost jobs or saw very weak growth. Trade, transportation, and utilities lost 81,000, and more than 49,000 of that were at food and beverage stores. That's potentially a consequence of the reopening of the restaurant economy, that is reflected, of course, in the number of new jobs at restaurants. Professional and business services lost 79,000 jobs, and that was due almost totally due to a 111,000 job loss at temporary employment agencies. That was a sector that we had seen a big surge in early in the year and at the end of last year, as a lot of businesses saw greater demand, but there was a lot of uncertainty over the pandemic. Manufacturing shed 18,000 jobs. Now, most manufacturing industries saw very little change in employment, but motor vehicles and parts manufacturing shed 27,000 jobs as the shortage of semiconductors and other components took a toll on production. Now, we've become accustomed to retail trade being the main weakness in the trade, transportation, and utilities sector. In April, however, transportation was mostly to blame, as it accounted for 74,000 of the 81,000 jobs lost. You can't really blame for higher trucking for that, although it did lose jobs. But the 1,500 job reduction, while small, was surprising given the strong indicators of freight demand. For higher trucking, employment is still 44,500 jobs, or 2.9% below the pre-pandemic month of February of last year. Now, the fourth quarter of last year had seen the strongest 3 months of hiring in 25 years. Through April of this year, for higher trucking has added a net of just 1,400 payroll jobs. And here's where I wanted to revisit the topic I addressed at the top of the podcast, which, of course, is the surge in new trucking companies. Most new carriers are very small, one, two truck operations, and they're not generally captured in the Bureau of Labor Statistics payroll employment figures. Therefore, to the extent that employee drivers are striking out on their own by getting authority and buying a truck, that would represent a drain on payroll employment. Now, we believe that most of these new carriers probably were leased owner-operators previously. But as I noted earlier, this year has already produced nearly 32,000 new carriers. So even if a small share of those operations are company drivers becoming independent carriers, that would add to the challenge that for-hire trucking has in maintaining a healthy level of payroll employment. Okay, so back to transportation's loss of 74,000 jobs. We actually saw an increase in air transportation, which of course has been severely hurt by the pandemic. And as I mentioned earlier, trucking had a very small loss. Most of the other transportation industries also saw very small changes. The principal hit came from couriers and messengers, or what we generally call parcel and local delivery. Payroll employment plunged in that sector by 77,400 jobs, seasonally adjusted. That's the largest drop on record, aside from a 1997 UPS strike, which of course is not really a loss of jobs in an economic sense. As the pandemic fades and vaccinations ramp up, we could be seeing something of a correction in parcel and local delivery as more consumers choose to shop for products in person. Of course, the whole push for e-commerce is not going away, but certainly it's possible that we're seeing a little bit of the heat, a little bit of the extra demand caused by the pandemic coming off. However, even with the sharp drop in April, couriers and messengers employment is up by 126,000 jobs, or 14.3% during the pandemic. Now, before I move on to the one indicator this week not related to the labor market, I wanted to touch on more granular employment and wage data related to trucking. I usually don't discuss the segment level data because the data lags the top level data for hire trucking by a month, and the monthly movements in the data usually aren't all that interesting. But the March data released last week showed something quite interesting. As I've been talking about for months, the flatbed segment has been setting records in the spot market for volume and rates for weeks on end. And yet, despite that, according to BLS data, wages for production and non-supervisory workers in long-distance specialized trucking, that's about as close as we can get in the BLS data to a flatbed driver, have significantly lagged wages in their counterparts for their counterparts in long-distance truckload, general freight truckload. So preliminary data in last week's report showed an enormous increase of 7% month over month in March for production in non-supervisory workers in long-distance specialized. That followed a 4.6% gain in February. In just 2 months, long-distance specialized has all but erased a gap of $125 a week with general freight truckload. Now, some of this is probably higher pay. The rest of it is an increase in freight volume, which of course means more miles. You know, one caveat on this is that specialized freight trucking is not flatbed purely, and perhaps not even a majority of it flatbed. Everything else that is basically not dry van or container is included in that, including refrigerated, but also, of course, tank and hoppers and all those other specialized segments. However, I think we can assume that what's happening with flatbed has a lot to do with the changes in this data. Now, because the change in the data over the last couple of months has been so dramatic, I will allow for the possibility that it reflects a correction of bad data by BLS as opposed to a true change in wages. Certainly, that's always a risk when we get to data at such a granular level. However, given the lag in the recovery for the industrial sector, and of course what we've been seeing in the spot market, it is not unreasonable that general freight truckload wages had exceeded specialized until very recently. So when I look at that, while it is dramatic, it doesn't really conflict with the other indications that we're seeing of what might be happening in flatbed relative to, say, dry van. Okay, last week brought little economic data aside from the labor market, but there was a key indicator related to manufacturing. The Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index retreated in April, declining by 4 points to 60.7. Now, that is weaker than it was in March, but it is still a very strong reading. The sharpest decline was in the production component, which is not surprising given that parts and materials shortages and other constraints are holding back production. However, as with the overall index, the production component still indicates solid growth, just at a slower rate than in March. Okay, so that's it for this week. Let's recap. April set a record for the number of new trucking firms. The spot market set records for volume and rates. Diesel prices rose sharply in the latest week. The unemployment situation improved markedly. The U.S. economy added 266,000 payroll jobs. The unemployment rate ticked up very slightly to 6.1%. Trucking still struggles to add headcount. Parcel and local delivery saw a huge drop in jobs in April. Wages in specialized long-distance trucking jumped sharply in February and especially in March. And the ISM Manufacturing Index retreated somewhat in April. Join us next week for a discussion of industrial production and manufacturing, retail sales, inventories, and the Producer Price Index, along with, of course, our usual recap of spot market metrics, diesel prices, and any other major developments that we will have to cover. So that's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 111 for the week of May 10th, 2021. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.